Memorial Day doorbuster deals are here at Lowe's. Right now, rewards members save $80 on the Master Forge 4-burner gas grill, now just $149. Plus, rewards members save $900 on the Lowe's exclusive Hisense French door refrigerator, now only $999. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/26. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Programs subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Rewind the dynamite from the most wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
AEW Dynamite, the go-home edition of Dynamite before the go-home edition of Collision.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
We were talking about this today, Wade, the Thursday night Collision. Do you like the Thursday night experiment of Collision? Could you see this being the permanent night?
I think if AEW wanted it to, or if AEW could prefer it, I think they would prefer it. And I think I would prefer it as a wrestling fan. Just a weeknight feels a bit more relevant for the wrestling cycle and numerous other benefits, including not having to go up against WWE PLEs pretty frequently. So I think it would be great for them if it's available. Yeah.
Speaking of television time slots, I was casually scanning, as I typically do in my downtime, the USA Network schedule for the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And I went to the bottom of the page where it had the listings for Friday, June the 6th. And there was SmackDown listed for 3 hours.
Oh, so, okay.
I can't say that's set in stone, but that was what was listed on the schedule. So it scared me.
Prepare yourself.
What if we just got Revolution? What if we reviewed it as a 2-hour show? Like, what if we just cut off at 10?
Like, do what Collision?
Yeah, exactly. We will be TNT.
Mm, I wonder how our audience would feel about that.
Well, we could just, you know what? That's how hard would it be to follow SmackDown if we kept it to a regimented 120 minutes?
I mean, why not just review 10 minutes of it then?
Wait, I love this idea. How would 10 you feel every Friday?
Hold on, maybe a better question for you is, how would you feel about a Thursday Collision? Because right now you're watching Impact on Thursdays.
Yeah,
and I feel bad for Impact because they would probably have to move yet again.
Well, I mean, where's Impact going to move? There's no nights. There's no nights available. That's the wrestling game. I mean, you're going to be going against somebody. Sure, move Impact to Saturday. I mean, God knows, I don't. The same people that are still watching Impact now they'll wake up Sunday at 4 a.m. to watch Impact if they had to. Yeah. There, these people found something called the Pursuit Channel.
That's right.
Okay, yes. That is the That is the wrestling fan that's just has the Scotiabank Arena Facebook event page and just refreshes it. And once in a goddamn blue moon, oh my God, there's a wrestling event there, and no one else is aware of this. That's who's watching wrestling on the Pursuit Channel. Back to in-house notes. We will not be doing a 10-minute review of SmackDown, but I'm open to suggestions. Today on Pollock and Thurston, we went through the timeline of AEW. We went through all of the key historical moments in AEW's history as they come up on their 6th anniversary of the first Double or Nothing, their first show in the whole event's history. How long ago was this? 6 years ago, this is when me and Wei did our reviews together in this room. This table was facing this way. I looked this up today on YouTube, where I was curious to hear some of our thoughts about the first Double or Nothing. So I skimmed through it. I did not pull anything to just throw back at you, but it was,
this was back when we were doing these live. Even we were just kind of recording these and then releasing them for whenever we got to them.
Right. We definitely were doing it live somehow, because we took calls at the end.
Oh, we were. Okay. Yeah. All right.
But yeah, the highlight being me saying, I think this was a home run show for the company. And you, after praising it, I wouldn't say a home run, but it was a good show. You were critical of some of the production gaffes that I'm sure that they did have on that show.
I guess define home run, you know, a home run might be different for you than what it means for me.
Well,
for me,
you know, a home run. Home run means you stay on the air for the entire duration that you had advertised. That's a home run.
Okay. Then that's a low bar.
Yeah, I guess.
Then so. Saturday would have been triple.
No.
You're rounded three bases, like a three quarters of the way to home.
Yeah, it meant that whoever was working the production truck had to run home afterwards in embarrassment. Okay. So anyway, that dropped today. An interesting historical look at AEW's history, the big important moments, the highs, the lows, and trying to get into Tony Khan's head. If he could go back to the summer of 2021, does he still sign CM Punk?
A very impressive, I would say, like condensed look back into, like, at this point, a pretty colorful history in AEW. You know, 6 years. I mean, I remember that first episode, like, or at least the sort of like hype around the debut very clearly. But to think about everything they've been through, you know, not to mention, of course, CM Punk and that entire saga. I like the fact that we're kind of in this zone now where we can look back at just the 6 years as this sort of collection of just very significant events in wrestling history.
Yeah, I don't want to repeat myself, but it's more remarkable today than it even was in 2019 that all of these different factors came together that I really don't think, even if you had all those contracts coming due today in some form or fashion, like, you're just not in a position where you could challenge WWE as they could. Like, that was the perfect time with the perfect people, with this anomaly in a Tony Khan who both had a ridiculous passion for pro wrestling, money, and connections to a massive, like, media company as well. Like, it is just like one of the, like, an incredible feat that all these things came together and the timing of when it did. Because I think there was a, and you can certainly look at the fact that I think it, in the long term, like, WWE came out of it, like, much better having this competitor attached to it. There's lots that you can go into regarding their history, and lots that you guys went into the history of one Neil Flanagan on Tuesday's edition of The Wellness Policy. It was Way's return to the WP as you guys were celebrating your 50th episode.
Yeah, I would say.
Did you guys do a timeline on your own show about the history of The Wellness Policy?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we're very good researchers to even be able to do that if we wanted to. But it was the 50th edition of The Wellness Policy. And I would say at this point, really, the show is just more of a, I would say, kind of hangout with me and my two friends, Neil Flanagan and Jordan Goodman, and the post-wrestling community and the regulars that choose to call in. And in this particular episode, we got a bit of an update on I would say the dating adventures of Neil Flanagan, which
that should be the name of the show.
Oh, maybe from this point on, yeah, because there's not that much exciting going on in my personal life. So,
talking about, Way? You're in the midst of just.
It's way more interesting to hear about Neil Flanagan and his Tinder stories than it is to hear about diaper changers. So. Tune in for that. It was a very fun episode, and I'm very grateful for the space that I have with those two in the wrestling post-wrestling audience. So that is available for free on our YouTube and also on the free Post-Wrestling Cafe feed, where you can sign up and be a free member, where we may occasionally drop some free shows like this one.
Yes, if you're commitment averse, you can sign up for the cafe on the free tier, and there are special releases that we throw out to everyone that is signed up on the cafe. And yes, it is quite the hangout that the three of you have every month. For OGs listening to the Wellness Policy, which I am a member of, you may remember back when sometimes they would read a book and then come back, and it was only after X amount of months that they dropped this that I felt, like,
this is a lot of work. I can't read.
Well,
that
I had
fast.
To wait for a certain amount of grace period before I could steal that idea and launch book club while also stealing one of your co-hosts, because Neil Flanagan and I are coming back with the book club on Thursday. This is for our Double Double and Espresso members. Thursday, we're chatting about all the president's men, and we are going to be talking about the Watergate scandal, the fall of Richard Nixon, and Deep Throat. Not the pornographic film, but
right.
The
That's
informant.
Next month.
Yes. Yeah. We'll eventually get to porn. But yes, this is coming up on Thursday for everyone to check out. I'm looking forward to this one. This is our first non-wrestling book review. So I do appreciate anyone's feedback. If they prefer us to stay on the wrestling path, I know Neil wants to veer off, and I'm more than happy to just ride shotgun with whatever is chosen.
Well, when you're talking about politics, I mean, come on, it's close enough to pro wrestling, isn't it?
And also, last thing we'll note is that on Thursday as well, we're going to be dropping a special review of this week's episode of Dark Side of the Ring, The Scream Queen Daphne, profiling Shannon Spruill, which aired on Tuesday night on Vice. And this is going to be reviewed by our resident film reviewers, Karen Peterson and Kate from Montreal, getting together to chat about what I will say I think was one of best episodes Dark Side has ever produced. I thought this was it was an outstanding episode, and I know that there were people that were close to Daphne that were very leery about this episode. I think they did a absolutely phenomenal job on what was obviously a very, very dark subject matter in terms of the way in which she died in 2021. But they did. I just think they handled this so well in terms of the family being involved and this being a woman who clearly suffered so much from bipolar disorder compounded by concussions, but very much wanted her message to be out there and was adamant about her brain being studied after she died, that I think, like, this was to me like the ultimate way to kind of pay tribute to this person who died at a very young age in the most tragic of circumstances. But this never felt to me in like any kind of like poor taste, or like they really handled this subject with a lot of care, and I came away with this like thinking this is probably one of the best hours they've put together.
I'm looking forward to some deep dive thoughts from Karen and Kate. Who, yeah, all right.
So that is coming out Thursday, postwrestlingcafe.com, where you can sign up and you get the XL editions of this show, Rewind to Raw, Rewind to SmackDown, all of our bonus shows, including the ones we just mentioned. And next week, we're coming at you with a new edition of Rewind Away once the polls close on Thursday, of you getting to decide what we review. So head on over to postwrestlingcafe.com. If you were in Albuquerque, New Mexico, you were heading on over to the Rio Rancho Event Center. Corporate ownership be damned. We're the Rio Rancho Event Center.
Is Rio Rancho not a corporation?
No.
What is that?
Rio Rancho is the name of a city.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess maybe nobody wanted to buy it.
Well, definitely MVP didn't want to buy any stock in Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. He was having a lot of fun just railing on these people in Albuquerque. So 3,120 tickets distributed, according to WrestleTix. Shivani brings out Hangman Page and Will Ospreay for our first of two face-to-face segments on this show going into Double or Nothing. And it's Ospreay, Hangman, face-to-face, and Ospreay assures security he's not going to get physical, neither will Hangman, so he sends security on their way, but with the caveat they will still be paid for the night's work.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, I was waiting for security to say, yeah, that's not an option at this point. We're here, we're ready to work, you will absolutely pay us for tonight's work. Ospreay asks Hangman, do you still drink? And Stone Cold Will, goes and grabs some beers at ringside, and he goes to toast Hangman, who is taking part in none of this. Ospreay states that, "I believe we should be the main event on Sunday," which means they're going to be. He wants to follow Anarchy in the arena and explains the importance of this match because the winner is responsible for bringing the AEW title back. "I have done everything right since I've arrived in AEW. I don't sleep on Tuesdays. I'm constantly jet lagged. I have to travel from England every single week, and I do it because I want to wear that belt. I want to wear it with pride, and I want to bring it home to my home country at Forbidden Door on August 24th. The O2 Arena is 30 minutes from my home. I want to thank all the people back home who have supported me and seen me grow up, and I want to bring it home because every Tuesday I have to leave my child, and I want to come home as the world champion to him. I know, Hangman, that you want it, but I just want it a little bit more." And Paige has his turn to come back from this all-time speech from Will Ospreay. Paige says, "I have lived that same feeling that you currently have. There is no greater honor than being AEW champion. Will, to you, it's a professional accomplishment. To me, it's personal. I don't want this. I need this because I wasted 2 years of my life full of grief, sorrow, and hate. I haven't won a title or a tournament in that whole time. The saddest part for me was on Christmas morning, my son watching me, looking out the window, staring because of someone that I knew was not coming back. And he says, I've become a disappointment to my son, to my wife. I don't want them to pity me. I need to show my wife that I'm the man that I'm supposed to be. And I have to prove that Ospreay was wrong when you told me it was too little and too late for me to be the guy." Ospreay says that, "I lost by leaving everything in the ring. I've lost in this ring, but in losing, I've also won the respect of these people. I've also won their trust. And I don't know if I have what it takes to beat Jon Moxley. But Hangman, you have beaten Moxley. So I need that version of you on Sunday, because if I can beat that version, I know I can beat Moxley. Paige's attention, yours has been on Swerve and not being the guy. The last year has changed you, Hangman. Kids no longer look up to you. The locker room has lost respect for you." And Ospreay goes to list off all the people he's beaten and says, "I'm the best in the fucking world, bruv. And Hangman, if you happen to win on Sunday, I'll be happy for you and I'll have your back. And I hope you'll do the same for me, because on Sunday, it's a shootout in the desert." As he chugs down his beer, Hangman does the same, and then they walk up the aisle together, right up to the Owen Trophy for this final stare down, as Excalibur says that Tony Khan has confirmed this will be the main event. I mean, this segment. What more can I possibly say, Wei? I want to hear your thoughts.
Really, really strong back and forth. I think both had very compelling reasons for winning their matches, with focus that it was beyond this match, whether it be for Forbidden Door or taking down Jon Moxley and the Death Riders at All In. They're making such a big deal out of this match and the journey towards getting that All In title shot that it really does feel like, you know, whoever's going to be facing Moxley at All In will be the one to end this Death Rider story, because I just can't see them making such a big deal out of it only for that person to fail. Would be very disappointing.
The sadist in me would love to just have the post-show reaction to Moxley retaining.
I mean, it's possible, but I mean, I just can't really see it. But this feels at this point like a WrestleMania build, and therefore this Owen Cup very much feels like kind of their version of the Rumble, you know, which it should. If I had to nitpick something, I felt like they got a little too shouty for my taste by the end, where it sounded a bit like they were just trying to compete to see who could talk loudest. And that, to me, got in the way a little of, I think, the great points that both of them were making. I think it was an attempt to be passionate, but it to me would have felt a little bit more refined if they could have maybe exhibited a little bit more of a control of their volume. But overall, like, if you're trying to create a main event feel for this, I mean, honestly, it was already there on paper because this was the match that I think almost everybody was probably looking forward to the most as a singles. But just to have a segment like this just kind of fully realizes and fully confirms our anticipation for this as the main event.
Yeah, I love this segment. I just thought it was like, this is the kind of segment you watch and you sell people on a pay-per-view. I think they've outlined this so well. You can see, you can make arguments for, like, they made the arguments for either one of them winning. And I think come Sunday night when this bell rings, I think the atmosphere is going to be amazing. And I'm just so looking forward to this match. I think it's going to be like a match of the year contender, and you have massive stakes attached to it, and you can argue either way of where you go with who wins this match. So a very, very strong segment to kick off the show.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/49ers or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/49ers.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, including an in-depth look at WrestleMania 32 from 2016, a 2003 edition of SmackDown featuring the Iron Man match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, and a special patron's pick where you get to choose what John and Wei review. MCU Later returns with a review of Thunderbolts. Pollock and Ting will sit down and talk. We've also got coverage of Wrestling Dontaku, Collision Course every Saturday night, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. $6 a month gets you in the door at postwrestlingcafe.com. And that transitions to Moxley and Shafir, who are outside of the arena and walk in. And this is for the All-Star 8-man tag with John Moxley and the Young, or All-Star 6-man tag, as we've got John Moxley and the Young Bucks taking on Samoa Joe, Swerve Strickland, and Powerhouse Hobbs. And it's Moxley and Joe that begin with this big striking battle. And then we get the long graphics of all the places that you can order this pay-per-view. And I was aware of Amazon Prime, and I was aware of Triller TV internationally and PPV.com. But I was not aware that Excalibur broke the news that for the first time ever, it will be offered on FUBU.
Oh, did he say FUBU?
Not FUBO, FUBU.
Interesting.
So I am very excited about mid to late 90s clothing apparel also offering you Double or Nothing.
So the pay-per-view will come with my hoodie?
Yes.
My FUBU hoodie?
Yes. Okay. For us, by all us. Right. Swerve is heavily cheered, lands the Fosbury to the floor, and then Joe follows with a elbow suicida. They get the advantage on Hobbs and attack his previously injured knee. Swerve and Matt then both go for flips, and they land on the floor. They're supposed to, like, both land on their feet, but I don't know if one of the Bucks' headbands was there. Something was on the ground, and Swerve just totally, like, wiped out slipping on this, and then just had to get right back up, and they got the heat on Swerve. Then we have Matt landing this big high cross to Joe and Hobbs on the floor. They hit Risky Business on Swerve. They go through two commercial breaks. Moxley hits a pile driver onto Swerve. Joe breaks it up. This crowd for 3,000 people, they were so amped for this. We got the red spider graphic crawling across the top. And then the tag is made to Joe, and he goes wild. He eats a pair of super kicks from the Bucks, just eats them, and nails Matt and Nick with lariats. And then it's everyone in. They're all laying each other out. Hobbs hits three spine busters to all of the opponents, but then Mox stops him with a cutter. Bucks then super kick Joe and superplex Swerve. He ducks the EVP trigger, and as Joe puts Nick into the coquina clutch, Swerve rolls up Matt for the pin in 21 minutes and 16 seconds. We would get into the immediate post-match attack, but a lengthy match to kick off Dynamite with the participants, well, some of the participants for Anarchy in the Arena.
Mm-hmm. I thought the match was great, you know, and at this point kind of feels like it fulfills the expected quota that we have for Dynamite, just giving us like a great kick-ass multi-person match, usually involving the Bucks. I thought each babyface had a chance to look really strong in this match, and I think much of that comes down to the Bucks. You know, the Bucks, of course, are maybe more known for like their ability to dazzle, but as heels, I think their ability to get beaten up really well is great as well, because, you know, as great as Moxley is, and you need somebody who's in that sort of leadership role, he's not really selling for, you know, the ops like the Bucks are. So I just think they you had Joe coming out of this looking great, Hobbs and Swerve both look coming out of this looking really strong. So that to me was probably the strongest point of all of this, and then of course the post-match as well.
Yeah, they just had a great reaction throughout this very strong match. I agree. Like, everyone got their shine in this match, and everyone's attention was toward the reveal of who was, in fact, going to be in this match. So we go to the post-match, and Claudio and Yuta immediately get involved while Marina attacks Prince Nana, and Shibata makes his return, attacking Yuta and Claudio. Shafir hits the low blow on Shibata. Willow runs down. Kenny Omega runs down. He's hitting Snapdragons, catches Matt, and then hits him with a V trigger, and they pull out a table, and Omega lifts up Matt on the edge of the ring for a one-winged angel, which Claudio saves Matt from, but I feel almost assuredly is going to happen on Sunday. Joe gets on the mic, says, "A sane man would say that we're going to get you on Sunday, but I don't give a shit about getting you on Sunday. I'm coming for you tonight."
Mm-hmm.
So more to come. Alicia Toot is with the Hurt Syndicate and their lawyer. MJF walks in with Mark Sterling to go over the contract, and the Hurt Syndicate is out, and we have the introduction of MJF, which did get some boos, and MJF comes out. He says his mother once told him that the most important moment of your life is when you marry the love of your life. But that dumb bitch never joined the Hurt Syndicate. And MJF and MVP just took turns railing on Albuquerque. They were taking glee in insulting this crowd, especially MVP. Sterling brings out the contract. MJF signs it. MVP signs it. Shelton signs it. Bobby Lashley is reluctant. Looks like he's, he's getting cold feet on his wedding day to align with the love of his life.
We saw that on TV.
So he was, you're right. Yeah, this man's a veteran of that. So he reluctantly signs the contract. But before anything can progress, out come the Sons of Texas, or as MJF calls them, white trash Southern honkies. And Dustin tells him...
Is Sammy Guevara white?
I do not think that he would... I don't think he would check the box for any of this. But Dustin takes it personally, to tells him to shut up, you stupid son of a bitch. And he goes on like a 3-minute just promo destruction of the Hurt Syndicate. He gets on MJF for never wrestling. "I hate your guts." And he respects MVP, but warns them about this snake in the grass, MJF. "We are the day one guys," and mentions being at the first Double or Nothing where we did something special. Pollock and Thurston for more details. "And we want more gold," and dares them to try and hurt us. "I'd bet on the day one guys." And Sammy just stood here. Dustin handles the promos. I'll do the Shooting Star Press on Sunday.
Yeah, that part kind of surprises me, considering how big of a role Sammy Guevara has had throughout the 6 years. I mean, obviously, something's been going on, okay? Like in that he's been relegated to Ring of Honor for the most part since his return, and now coming back, even now that this tag team is being is a part of this pay-per-view cycle, he's not cut a promo on Dynamite, at least to my knowledge. So it's kind of strange to me that he continues to feel like he's being pushed into the background. So I think they've made minimal effort in making the Sons of Texas feel like compelling challengers in the show. I mean, the storyline that we've gotten has largely revolved around Hurt Business and MJF, and therefore it really just kind of feels like these two are an accessory to that story. This segment, I thought Dustin cut a decent promo, and I think, you know, the continued MJF interaction with the Hurt Syndicate to me is a lot of fun to watch. But as far as like a title challenge goes, it does feel more like a checkbox item for them to just give the Sons of Texas some promo time heading into the match on Saturday.
I think that we'll get like a more than your like 5-6 minutes. I think that they will give Dustin and Sammy quite a bit in this match. In terms of coming out of this, I would only suspect that Dustin and Guevara, like, I think the ideal role for them at All In, like being in Texas, is something with the Von Erichs, and you can tie in that for kind of your local angle. But I don't see them being in something like of grand significance at All In Texas.
Yeah, I had thought we may have gotten this particular match, you know, for the show, but clearly we're not getting it because we're getting it on Saturday. I don't see them, you know, dragging this out to a rematch. Maybe it makes the show. Maybe it's more of a kickoff thing that, you know, the Sons of Texas will be a part of.
Maybe we get an extension of this somehow. Dustin Rhodes with the Von Erichs involved with MJF at All In Texas. Lance Von Erich himself takes the claw from Kevin.
He finally,
you were never our brother. Never.
Yeah.
Renee is with Kazuchika Okada and asks him about Speedball Mike Bailey calling him out. And Okada explains, I call people out, not the other way around. So he will defend this title against Speedball on Sunday. And Renee asks him if the fact that Bailey has never been pinned in AEW. And Okada says, there will be a first time for everything. Trust me. And he walks off screen and returns. Trust me. Modern Jake the Snake here.
Well, I mean, the joke is, we're expecting him to say bitch.
Yeah, but he didn't.
He didn't, no.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was funny. You know, for me, it's been a while since I feel Okada has made me laugh, and I think there's only so far you can take the whole bitch thing, but he got me here with this fake out. I thought, you know, he showed some pretty strong comedic timing.
Do we know for sure that he was not just taking a pause to say it at the end and they cut away early? Given the network?
He repeated it.
Yeah,
he said it twice.
I'm saying he was going to end. Anyway, I was trying to make a joke.
Yeah, okay. Got it.
Sometimes they miss. Anthony Bowens and Ricochet. Bowens sends Ricochet into the barricade, scissors Billy, and then Bowens gets his leg yanked out from under him. Bowens ducks the spirit gun and hits the mollywop, sending Ricochet to the floor. And Billy starts dealing with Paul Turner, which allows Ricochet to casually grab the scissors from underneath the ring and nail Bowens with the scissors and pins him after the spirit gun in 9 minutes and 26 seconds. So might be the 5-tool player, but he overlooked the 6th tool, which are blades,
which are real scissors. Yeah. Not the finger kind. Good match, you know, to me highlighted by like the strong, fun heel work from Ricochet. He's fun to watch, and he's just really unlock this like hidden charisma from within him that I continue to be quite enamored by. Bowens, I mean, you know, we can talk about Caster for sure, but like even Bowens, since he's kind of come back with this makeover, hasn't really felt like he's really broken out of like the Acclaimed, or at least he's certainly not more over than he was as part of the Acclaimed. And in fact, kind of feels like a bit of a generic babyface to me right now, which is fine for a role like this, but hardly, I think, the type of act that I could see advancing, you know, unless there's some significant progression.
Regardless of where they are, did you feel it was time to move on from the Acclaimed? Had that kind of run its course?
I wouldn't say necessarily, John. Maybe more important is a satisfying breakup, and I don't even think we had like a very satisfying breakup story between them.
because at this point, you cannot argue either of them is stronger apart than they were together. Mark Briscoe then wheels out a stretcher, and Ricochet had to sell this as the most frightening thing in the world as he gets hit with the stretcher, and he gets placed onto the stretcher. Briscoe climbs to the top to tease Froggy Bow, but Ricochet gets out of the way. And much like Matt taking a one-winged angel off the edge, I feel we will see this. And probably Mark Briscoe wiping himself out on the empty stretcher.
He'll just stay on the stretcher as he gets wheeled back?
It might need it, yeah. Yeah, they'll need a backup stretcher for real. Then they go over the pay-per-view, and this is the lineup for Anarchy in the Arena. We will have John Moxley, the Young Bucks, Claudio, Yuta, and Marina Shafir against Kenny Omega, Swerve, Samoa Joe, Hobbs, and Willow Nightingale. So no Gabe Kidd in the match itself, though you can imagine he could get involved.
Yeah, as they would tease later on in the match itself. I mean, not necessarily the lineups that I think we were predicting come the end of Dynamite last week. Here now with the inclusion of Shibata, as well as like another person on the Death Riders, and also the exclusion of Gabe Kidd. But I think everybody was bound to be involved somehow. This is just the official lineup. The fact that I guess Kidd is a big part of this match will suggest that the babyfaces will also have an equalizer on their side. That may be a surprise.
Will he be wandering down with a canister of gasoline?
One could hope.
Yeah. Stay tuned for the preview. We'll be going over all of this.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Collision on Thursday night. We'll see Mercedes Moné against Reina Isis for the TBS title. And this is it's a title match. It's an open challenge that she has issued. Rush and Dralistico against Speedball and Commander. Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong against the Grizzled Young Vets. Jay Lethal against Kyle Fletcher. And a contract signing as FTR and Stokely were sent a digital copy of their contract. Stokely ain't using Adobe Acrobat. He wants to look them in the eye. And that means they're going to travel nowhere to stick around for the Collision tapings that are happening right now so they can look them in the eye. First time we've ever heard Adobe Acrobat incorporated into a wrestling promo period.
We shall remember this date. Are you going to prep this for the AEW timeline in 6 years from now?
Already put it down, yeah. The first Adobe Acrobat drop. So that will also be on Thursday show.
Yeah.
Renee brings out Mercedes Moné and Jamie Hayter for a sit-down face-to-face. It's like face-to-face-to-face, kind of, if you want to include the moderator.
If you include Renee, yeah.
Hayter warns Mercedes not to overlook me. I keep coming back. Yes, I'm rough around the edges, unlike you, but I'm a fighter. And this means more to me. And it's about not being forgotten. Because if I lose, people are going to ask, what's next for Jamie? And they'll wonder if it was even worth me coming back. And I don't know the answer to that. I was wanting more of this and less of wrestling promo 101 of just lines.
I agree.
There's a real story here, and she's obviously very aware of it, too. I just wish they got more into this.
Yeah.
Moné calls herself a revolution and the Beyonce of women's wrestling and says, I am looking through you like the glass doll that you are. My destiny is going to All In Texas to become women's champion. I've been the best TBS champion in history. Take that, Jade. 360 days as champion, 25-0 in singles matches, and Double or Nothing will not be where Hayter's story begins, but where her chapter finally ends. And Jamie points out that you're looking a bit lighter after losing the strong women's title. Yeah, I was watching. And she says that your destiny is to lose everything. And this is enough as Mercedes gets up and attacks Jamie Hayter. Security's off at the bar by now, dining off of Will's hourly rate. And Hayter gets back up, and she is the one to deliver the Haterade on Mercedes Moné to conclude the segment. Right as Timeless Toni Storm walks out to join commentary for the next match. So she is overlooking all of this. But what did you think about this face to face.
I mean, first of all, I'm always impressed when wrestlers can do or take wrestling moves in high heels. And Mercedes Moné here somehow took this Haterade in these pumps very impressively. So
Hangman and Ospreay didn't pull that off.
No, they could not. No, absolutely. Very strong segment overall that I thought made up for, in my opinion, a series of backstage interviews that have been pretty lackluster. I thought this was great. Each told you what they're fighting for, gave you some heated words. Hater came across really well to me. You know, this might have been like among the most significant promos, maybe the most significant promo she's had since coming back. Her style of delivery in talking here felt a lot more fitting for a live atmosphere than in that backstage sit-down segment. The content of the promo was strong. She's fighting for relevancy. I think it makes sense for where she's at right now. So I thought this made up for a lot.
I thought by the end of it, I think she honed in on like the message and getting into that. I still think she is very rough around the edges when it comes to like promos. Like that is a weak aspect to her game that I still think needs to evolve. But I did feel this was overall like a segment that it was very very different from the Ospreay Hangman one, but one that by the end of it, like it does feel like an important match for Sunday. And I did like that about tonight's show, that they made you like, unlike trying to build up every match on the card as huge and gigantic, it's like there's three big matches on the show, basically. It's the two Owen matches and Anarchy in the Arena, and that's what they're really selling the show on and spending the lion's share of the time focused on these three matches. So Storm is out with Luther, and it's Mina Shirakawa and Julia Hart in the main event. And Hart controls her through the break, and then it's Mina coming back with a sliding knee, lands the dragon screw, and is working on the knee, applies the tarantula, but not the grounded version, so she can't win but with this. Storm asks what happened to Mina's theme last week. I quite enjoyed it. I think we should keep it. And
she called it a technical advanced beat.
Yeah, a technical advanced beat. Mina, unfortunately, messed up this crucifix bomb coming off the top. And then they just continued here. Hart stopped the glamorous driver, missed the moonsault. So Mina goes back after the knee, which is kind of the thread here between her attack on Julia and the post-match. She hits a spinning back fist. Hart stops another glamorous driver and goes for the roll-up. Mina turns it into an arm capture, cradling her for the pinfall. And it's Mina Shirakawa getting the win. And then Hart gets up and attacks Mina. So Sky Blue runs out after Mina places her in the figure four. So Sky Blue attacks Mina. Tony comes in, yanking Sky Blue off and kills her with this German. And we have the stare down between Tony and Mina. Mina grabs the belt and they have a tug of war spot for the title. And it ends with a dragon screw to Tony and puts her in a figure four around the post. Which Mina was trying desperately to hold on to. But by the end of this, it's the idea that Tony's knee is wrecked going into this match with Mina Shirakawa, and that's going to be her target. So you do have a story for this match.
You do, yeah. I thought the match was a good showcase for Mina Shirakawa, who is already so over with this audience that she really didn't need much airtime to kind of get prepped for this particular title match, right? Like, she came back last week, got a showcase match this week, and here we are, right? The build for her felt very quick, but it was also a story that really benefited from just, essentially, the story was Toni Storm having this undefeated streak and Mina coming in and breaking it, and really, that's kind of everything you need. So this post-match felt like a very quick, like, bare-bones way to escalate the physicality, but effective, you know, like on paper, this is a match that you could definitely look forward to for Saturday.
Man, this Pacers Knicks game that the WWE is just fully endorsing. Mm-hmm. They're in overtime, 18 seconds left. Pacers are up 136-135.
Okay, shall we stop the podcast?
Let's just sit here and wait. Do you want?
Well, you know, in basketball, like these 18 seconds will take like 30 minutes.
It could be 5 minutes before this is over. Man, this is intense. This is going to be this does tie in. Like this game is gigantic. Like this whole series is gigantic with the Knicks getting this far. That I mean, I'm sure this is drawing a massive audience tonight. That Dynamite was up against, but yeah, look at this. Can't script this any better. So then we have the final segment of the night where the Bucks are leaving the arena. I just loved how just they go to Renee and they're like, Joe said he was going to get his hands on us tonight, but he hasn't. And the show's over. So he's a big liar. I just love the setup for this. And Joe and Hobbs arrive with trash cans and they just start beating the hell out of the Bucks. Everyone emerges in anarchy in the arena. We've got chains. We've got kendo sticks and we've got chairs and they make their way.
We've got some 41.
Yeah, they start playing Sum 41. So could we get Still Waiting played on Sunday? Would they just go out? What Sum 41 song would be the one that you would license if you were going to do it for Anarchy in the Arena?
I don't think any of them.
None? Yeah.
I don't think so. I wonder what song they will play. I mean, this was, I think, meant to like remind you, hey, like one of the signatures of Anarchy in the Arena is that we're going to have music play throughout it.
They should have a playlist. They should start with Mina's 1 week theme.
Yeah. All the wrestling songs that people hate. They should play like the new Johnny Gargano theme song. Just like
how about Trick Williams rap from Tuesday? Do you think they would play that?
Yeah, I didn't dislike it. I guess a lot of people did.
I didn't know what the reaction was.
What song, truly, though, like could they pick from? Because it's not going to be a Wild Thing.
I have no idea. Like,
won't be Final Countdown.
Guessing songs. I don't know. Maybe you'll get... maybe they'll play Sabu's theme.
Just the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's one of the things I'm excited for, actually.
Okay, well, now you've added a new wrinkle to the drama for Sunday night. The Bucks hit an EVP trigger to Omega, and then there's a coquina clutch to Moxley on the floor when Gabe Kidd appears with the briefcase attacking Kenny. And Swerve and Omega get placed on tables on the floor, and the Bucks leap off the top, putting both through the tables, which led to a great tweet from AEW. Airing this clip and calling it corporate synergy.
Oh, yes. Nice.
And in case you forgot, Excalibur reminding us after Kenny gets put through a table that he had inches of his intestine removed. So remember that. And that's how we went off the air with the destruction of the baby faces and who will be showing up on Sunday. I think Gabe Kidd will. Will anyone else?
Yeah. I think these post-match attacks have been really, really great as their way to preview like the chaos of an anarchy in the arena. And these crowds have really kind of played along and done their part to make these feel like they were excellent, excellent, incredible atmosphere types of, you know, brawls. So I'm excited for the match.
Pacers won by three.
Oh, okay. By three. Wow. Yeah. All right.
I thought a very good go-home show overall. Like they limited it to... What did you think about the idea? Like they went with three matches, and I think number one, I think it was more important to have the non-wrestling stuff on this show, but you still got a ton of wrestling on this show. But also, I wonder if this like kind of keeps the crowd up a bit more that now has to sit through Collision on top of it. It's not like they sat through just a nonstop wrestling show for 2 hours either. Like you got a heavy amount of talking, and I would imagine Collision is going to be a very wrestling heavy show given the lineup.
I liked it. Yeah. In terms of pace, in terms of just like, I think objective, I think it was a good show that gave you appropriate focus for the matches that mattered. Gave you some sort of like longer term story build as well. So I no complaints there. I thought it was a well done show.
No, again, the big three matches, I thought they did a really great job promoting these. So there you have it. Those were our thoughts on Dynamite. And again, we will be back on Sunday night. As soon as Dynamite ends, whenever that will be, we will be live going over the show from Arizona. And we'll keep you up to date on game three of the series, which is also going down Sunday night.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. We are heading back to the Post Wrestling Cafe. Goodbye on YouTube. Don't forget to tip your waiter and hit the subscribe button on your way out, or you can do so. Take the leap. PostWrestlingCafe.com, where all the fun continues. We're going to be going through your feedback and then previewing both Double or Nothing and Saturday night's main event. So goodbye to YouTube.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.